championship on the line right here. He's going for the corner. He's got it.
Hello and welcome to 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I'm your host, Will Baser, and I'm joined alongside by DT, Darius Terrell, my man. You guys are listening to the Hornscast channel. It's the Hornscast channel you guys can find on any podcasting platform out there. Y'all, today we are talking about Texas's two latest commitments in the 2021 class, defensive end Jordan Thomas and inside linebacker Maurice Blackwell. What do those two commitments mean for the 2021 class, and what's next coming down the line with Jonathan Brooks announcing his commitment later on this week? Then get into a little bit more recruiting as Zach Evans finally decided he's going to TCU, and talk about what's the weirder commitment story? What's the weirder recruitment saga? Zach Evans or Brew McCoy? Then finish off with a look at the 2020 season as it is in jeopardy. So we will talk about what's going on there and our thoughts. But let's start off now, Darius, in talking about this 2021 class, which the defensive side is starting to shape up, right? They missed on Landon Jackson back a few weeks ago to LSU as LSU came in and just kind of wreaked havoc for Texas, taking two of their top targets. But they were able to take Jordan Thomas away from Texas A&M. It was an A&M versus Texas battle, a classic one that happens in this state. And in the end, he chose Texas, right? What is he bringing to Texas?
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, Jordan Thomas, I mean, like you said, first things first, that's a head-to-head win over A&M. So, hey, let's get the pom-poms out. Let's beat the chest. Let's talk noise on social media. You know, everything. We running this state right now, right? But Jordan Thomas, he's the second defensive line commitment in the class. Texas already has Jatavion Sanders. I think Thomas will play defensive end like Sanders will. But while Jatavion is more a pass rusher, I think Jordan's more of a guy that's going to be more of a guy that does a little bit more of both. He won't stand out, I feel like, as far as being a pass rusher, but Jordan Thomas is going to be a guy that plays to run like a man. He's physical. He's versatile. He'll be able to play both weak side and strong side defensive end. And he seems like a guy, just listening to him talk, you know, watching the way he carries himself, he's going to be a guy that holds guys accountable in that locker room as well, too. He's going to make sure everybody's working hard and doing what they're supposed to do. On the website, the best comparison, the best analogy I have for it, because some folks were a little bit down on it because I didn't think he was as talented as a guy like Jatavion Sanders. But what I told them was, for every Brian Arakpo, you need guys like Larry Dibbles. You need guys like Tim Crowder that do their job as well. And I think Jordan Thomas falls into that category of a guy that won't be, he might not necessarily lead your team in sacks at any point in his career, but he's going to be a contributor and he's a piece to the puzzle. So I like Jordan Thomas a lot. I think he's a heck of a pickup for Texas. And the defensive front seven is looking like it's going to be a pretty solid class.
And one of the reasons people are a little down on him, or they are very down on him, is, like you said, he's not going to be the guy, or he's not an immediate impact player. He's a guy who's a project. He's, what now, 6'3", 240?
That's about right, yeah.
He's pretty thin right now for a 6'3 frame playing defensive end.
No, that dude's jacked, dog.
Oh, he's jacked, but I'm talking about at 240 playing defensive end in power five level.
No, he'll be the guy that plays at 260, 270.
And that's what I'm saying. If they're going to put weight on him come the next level, he's a project guy.
Yeah.
He's a guy who you bring in and, you know, maybe he does work out sooner, like Devondre Sweat, where he comes in not highly touted and, oh, he's a project guy and comes in immediately. He gets the weight on him pretty fast and is working out pretty soon. But right now, he's looking like a project guy. He needs more weight on him. He needs to be more fine-tuned in his techniques. But right now, I think it's a pretty solid pickup for Texas. It's not going to be an eye-popping pickup. But it's a guy who, given some time, loosen his hips and improve on his footwork, get some weight on him, which is going to happen. That's just what happens in strength and conditioning rooms at Power 5 levels. Weight is not a problem. I think this guy is a solid pickup.
No, I think he'll end up being a guy that ends up being a starter, you know, later in his career. He'll be a rotation guy the first few years. He reminds me, I don't know if folks remember, he reminds me a little bit looking at him, his film. And remember, Jordan Thomas missed his entire junior season. I believe he had a leg injury. So everything we saw from him came from him. All that tape is from his sophomore year. So understand that. Whereas I felt like, you know, yeah, there was a little bit of hip stiffness, you know, even though I felt like he moves fine laterally, he could be a completely different looking player on his senior film. I remember seeing Princely last year, Human Yelling. I hated Princely's junior film. I didn't like it at all. I thought his feet were heavy.
That was my immediate thought when I looked at him.
Right. But then come back and look at the senior tape, like he started to put it all together. He grew into that body a little bit. He looked like a different player. He was almost, you know, Princely was challenging for the top defensive line player in the state towards the end, in my opinion. And I think Jordan Thomas could have a similar type of trajectory. Jordan Thomas is already about 235, 240. He's going to get to campus around 245, 250. I just feel like it's not going to be a whole lot of room to add more mass on Thomas. What you see, I feel like, from him is what you're going to get a guy that plays the run like a man. I think if Texas gets better coaching, we see some better play from the secondary. The plays where they keep guys covered up for 3 seconds, that's when you'll see Jordan Thomas be able to get pressure just based on his effort. Okay, he's a guy that makes plays 20 yards down the field from the backside. He's a hustle guy. He plays, you know, plays his ass off. And Texas has success. You know, they have a track record with guys from Port Arthur. Okay, so I'm excited about him. I'm excited about his mindset, his upbringing. I think he's coming to Texas on a mission. Even though I don't think he'll be a star, he'll be a guy that's part of a very, very good defense in the future.
Right. Again, he's really raw from a technical standpoint, but yeah. Think about this. Would you agree that he's a less explosive Marquise Bimage, where especially with that ankle injury, he's a guy who has the same kind of frame as him. He's going to develop into a similar type of player, but he doesn't have that same explosion that Bimage had.
I think Bimage is a solid as far as, you know, what he'll look like once he fails out. A slightly bigger Marquise Bimage. Reggie Wilson, that type of guy, even Eddie Jones to a lesser extent, that type of guy, that's what I see when I see Jordan Thomas. So,
okay,
you know, who knows? Maybe we could be completely wrong. Maybe he comes in and gets 8 sacks as a true freshman. We don't know. But hey, I
dude,
like him. I don't
hoping.
Think he's a star. Yeah, but I mean, he's strong. You know, you can't teach the strength he's got in his hands. So Giles knows what he's doing. He knows what he's looking for. And Thomas is going to be a guy that contributes. I like him, and you know, we'll see what happens later.
But, that's true.
I think people should be excited about that one.
Giles knows his players. He knows the guys. He can coach them up. It doesn't matter if you're a low 3-star or a 5-star. He's a developer. He's really good at what he does. I guess under Giles' care, should do well. But I wonder what this means now that you have Jatavion Sanders. What does it mean for guys like Shamar Turner or Marcus Burris? What does it mean for guys like that?
So with Jatavion's going to be a weak side defensive end or edge guy. Derek Harris is going to be a guy that they ask to rush the passer more than play a traditional, you know, kind of linebacker kind of role, you know, early on in his career. I think Jordan Thomas, they're going to stick him on the strong side. That means I think a guy like Shamar Turner or Marcus Burris, I think they end up as the interior guy in the class. And just looking at the roster and the depth chart, Texas isn't graduating. They're not losing anybody from the interior after this season. So they're only looking to take, it looks like, maybe one guy. And if that's Shamar Turner, they would be ecstatic. Okay.
Marcus Burris. Shamar Turner is that size and has that frame, but from conversations with you, you like him as an outside guy.
Well, I mean, that may change. Cause I mean, well, Shamar's 275 pounds now.
Right.
Okay. And, you know, folks don't lose weight when they get to college. He's going to be over 300 pounds at some point. So either that's a
really
you don't need a monstrous
defensive end. It's a really athletic
big
man.
Right. But I'm thinking about it. You got Broughton already on campus. He'll play inside, right? I think they want to keep Alfred Collins at defensive end. Okay. Shamar is that athletic penetrating 3 technique he could grow into. He could be that guy that. So I think he's the interior, number one interior target. But Oklahoma's surging. He's always liked LSU. They're going to have a fight for that guy. So it's going to be tough. But as far as the ends, the rusher, that part of it has become clear. Okay, it's Jatavion Sanders. It's Jordan Thomas. That's the targets. But inside, I think it's Shamar. Marcus Burris, I would be shocked if he chose Texas, especially with Landon Jackson going elsewhere. I haven't talked to Burris in a while. But I'll be surprised there. And then Kevin Gilliam, what is he from? He's from Virginia. When was the last time Texas got a guy from Virginia? You know, I just.
I remember.
So I think we'll see. If they don't land Shamar, I think we'll see other names pop up later on in the process. But I think the number one, it's clear now. It's Jatavion, it's Jordan, and then they want Shamar on the inside.
Mm-hmm. Or Marcus Burris.
Or Burris, yes. Hey, speaking of Shamar, he just texted me back. So, hey, I'll talk to him later. Go ahead.
So, another guy committed to Texas this past week, was 3-star inside linebacker. And I say I know he's an outside linebacker on every other site, but he's an inside linebacker for the Longhorns, Maurice Blackwell.
So Blackwell,
he can play Mike or Will, but right. He's looking like the Mike take for this class.
I'm not. So let me tell y'all about Blackwell. And I talked to one of his coaches last night. Blackwell was offered by Baylor. Baylor was his first big offer in November. And that's when, I believe when Dave Aranda came, it happened in January, right? As soon as he got here, Maurice Blackwell was his number one target. Now, even throughout the years at LSU, it's been 7 to 8 years. Aranda's put out double digit linebackers, and he quickly identified that guy. He was target number one. All right. Blackwell is about, he's 6'2". Okay. He's not the six, the what y'all see on the recruiting websites right now on ESPN, the 6'1", 190 is outdated. Just in winter testing before this whole pandemic hit, Arlington Martin had Blackwell at 6'2¼". And I believe he was 203 pounds. Okay. And listen to these numbers, Will. This is from their winter conditioning, winter testing. Okay. You ready for it? His squat at 550 pounds. This is a 16-year-old. Okay. 550 pound squat at 200 pounds. He bench pressed 320 pounds. Okay. Again, this is a 16-year-old. He deadlifts 570 pounds. Okay. They have him at a hand timed 4.47 40. Hand time, so it's really electronic, probably about a high 4.6, but that's still flying for a 16-year-old.
I think Cosme, hold up, let me look this up real fast on that deadlift. I think Cosme recently just tweeted out his deadlift. Mm-hmm. I think it was 570. Let me make sure.
When you look at Blackwell, you guys, y'all listening, if y'all have Twitter or whatever, I'll find his Twitter and I'll make sure I say something. I give y'all the name. He's got pictures in the media. Look at that kid.
Never mind.
675
for Cosme. I bet he'll get there. That's pretty insane.
But hey, Blackwell's got a frame. Will, he's going to be 230 with no problem. He's got long arms. I think they said he's got even though he's 6'2", they got him at like a 6'8", 6'9" wingspan. He's got long arms. Okay. But yeah, 4.47 40, 37-inch vertical. This is a hell of an athlete. He's explosive. Okay. And when you watch the tape, cause like he looks skinny, but like, I'm like, wow, guys' heads are getting knocked back. That ball is flying out. And I said, coach, what the heck is that about? And he said, that's weight room. He said that dude busts his butt in the weight room. He's a straight-A student. And he said he's the guy that relays all the defensive calls to the defense for Arlington Martin. And he thinks that he could be a guy eventually one day be a defensive captain at a place like Texas because he picks up things that quickly. He's always got questions in film. He's a guy that does the extra time. I know during lunch he's coming over to watch film. After practice, he's just a gym rat. It's important to him. And by all accounts, you know, going by the folks on the Baylor side and going off what I was told from Arlington Martin, this is a heck of a pickup, okay? This is a District 4-6A MVP as a linebacker, all right? And they play – that's one of the better districts in the state of Texas up there in Arlington and DFW. So this is a heck of a pickup, regardless of the 3-star, all that. Throw that crap in the trash. Maurice Blackwell is a big-time pickup for Texas.
You know what his tape reminds me of?
Who?
Kenneth Murray.
And he was a 3-star guy, right? But he was a 3-star guy throughout the whole deal.
Mm-hmm.
Blackwell won't finish with 3 stars. He'll get bumped up, but when you go checking the boxes off the field and you check the explosive stuff, everything, he checks every box and he's got no ego. I couldn't get a hold of him on social media. He barely tweets. Okay. Like everything about him points to him having a heck of a career at Texas. So I'm excited about that one. Cause I thought he was going to Arkansas or Baylor. Looking at Kenneth Murray right now, like already just looking at him, Blackwell's already longer. You know,
mm-hmm. But it's sort of the same type of movement, the same type of linebacker as a Kenneth Murray.
He's got that type of straight line speed. Yes. And you see plays on his highlight. He tracks guys down in pursuit as well. Now, I mean, just pure speed. Kenneth Murray could fly. I don't know if he's as fast as Kenneth Murray. Okay. But Blackwell is pretty quick. And I initially thought he would be a guy that plays inside, Will. But after talking to his coaches and things, and he definitely can play inside. They feel like with his length, okay, you might want to keep him more out on the outside, but he's going to be a work in progress in man-to-man coverage, okay? Those feet, even though he's good going straight forward, those feet are still, you know, kind of big, still growing into his frame. He's going to need some work in man-to-man coverage. But zone coverage, when he can keep his eyes on the quarterback, he's solid. But I think Blackwell's going to play as a freshman. He'll be a special team standout. I think he's the guy that'll start multiple years for Texas before he's done. Murray, though, I see what you're saying. That straight line speed that is there, but he's longer than Kenneth Murray is. So I'm excited about Blackwell.
Right. He's the type of linebacker that you want in this day and age. He's the type of guy. And yes, he might not have right now the size that you want for a linebacker, even though those numbers are outdated, that doesn't matter. It really doesn't. Strength and conditioning these days, they're going to put as much weight on him as they want. They're going to take as much weight off these guys as they want. The weight doesn't matter. What you're looking for is athleticism, the frame, the ability to keep that athleticism with that frame. This is a guy who kind of checks off all of those boxes. He's that linebacker that is this generation's linebacker. He is a fast, lengthy guy who can fill gaps and also cover in space. That's what you want. He's a fast linebacker, fast, rangy linebacker.
Right, and all you have to do, you're going to have to teach him, okay? But by all accounts, he's the type of kid that he's going to develop during this time because it's important to him. Football is the most important thing. He's not going to be out on 6th Street, you know, turning up after the games. He's not going to be, you know, doing whatever. He's all about football. So I'm excited about this guy.
So where does Terrence Cooks fit with a guy like Maurice Blackwell?
I think if you can get Cooks in the class, I think Cooks is your mic and you'll keep Blackwell outside. But I mean, the thing about both of them, they're both fast, they're both athletic. I mean, you can find out, you can get them in and you find out which guy plays which position, you know, the best. But no, Texas will absolutely take Cooks' commitment still, in addition to Blackwell and Harris. So no, all they're waiting for, I think we're looking ideally, you're looking for maybe, I think they might be looking for another outside linebacker. Cooks will be your mic. Blackwell would be your Will, and then Derek Harris is your, you know, your edge guy in the Prince Dorba role. So it's all starting to come into focus. But Cooks is absolutely still a take, even with Blackwell.
Right, right. I was wondering, okay, what does this look like? What does this class look like in four years? Right.
Yeah, I think Blackwell's gonna be 235, 240. Man, I don't know which one to end up being the mic. In 2022, I expect to see Blackwell out there playing for Texas. If Cooks commits, I expect to see him out there. If Shamar commits, I expect to see him out there. They're going to be guys that play are big parts of the future moving forward if Texas can land the other part. But Cooks is part of this, absolutely.
Yeah, one thing I'm really liking about this class so far is the lack of star chasing. They're not going after a guy like Hunter Washington because he has four stars to his name. They're going after a guy like Deuce Harmon.
Even look at linebacker, Will. They're not recruiting Kendrick Blackshear.
Right, they're not. Exactly. They're not going after Kendrick Blackshear because he's a high four star.
Right. It's not about that anymore. That's what's been getting them in trouble in the past. Evaluate. Mm-hmm. Look for what you're looking for, what you value, and then develop it. Okay. Coleman Hustler, I think, because Blackwell's family is from Arkansas originally as well. I think Hustler was able to come in and sell his SEC background as well to Blackwell's dad and stuff like that. I think we might need to keep an eye on Coleman Hustler as a pretty good recruiter while he's here.
Yeah, I'm interested. I'm interested in seeing if he can do what he did at South Carolina, which is take sort of the unwanted from the SEC in terms of that area and turn them into good players or decent players, which is what he was known for, and do that here at Texas where there's, you know, it's not as clear cut of the linebacker talent in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
I hope they can also do that for wide receiver because right now it's looking a little barren at wide receiver for Texas as they missed on basically all the top guys. But we'll see what happens there. And let's talk about some potential good news. Jonathan Brooks, the running back out of Hallettsville, Texas, is announcing his commitment later on this week on the 15th, so this Friday. Right now, everybody's saying he's going to Texas. That's what the majority of analysts are saying. That's what we believe here as well. What do you think, if he does choose Texas, Jonathan Brooks would bring to Texas? What is it that he does really well that Longhorn fans should be, yeah, we really want this guy to choose Texas on Friday?
Shit, well, I think he does. He does everything. I mean, he does a little bit of everything. He's a guy that's got legitimate size. He's 6 foot. He's about 190 pounds right now. The guys you were just talking a second ago about, you know, stars and things like that, folks that have been fans of Texas have gotten used to looking at the stars on folks, okay? It's another guy that's not going to be, he's not a high four-star, five-star guy. He's rated 3 stars on all the websites, okay? First things first, I think if he played somewhere besides Hallettsville, okay, that would be a different story. He'd have, you know, more offers than just, you know, Texas Tech, Colorado State, UTSA. And Hallettsville is legit in every direction. It's 1 hour and 45 minutes from everywhere. It's 1 hour and 45 from Austin. It's 1 hour and 45 from San Antonio. It's 1 hour and 45 from Houston. So, I mean, he's kind of in the middle of nowhere. But the guy he reminds me a lot of, Will, I don't know if you remember this. Do you remember watching Stanford in the But it was probably around 2010, 2011. You remember a guy named Stephan Taylor
from Stephon Mansfield? Taylor?
Stephon Taylor, running back.
Sounds very familiar, yeah.
He reminds me of that guy a little bit. And okay. what I love about Brooks, okay, his feet are tremendous. Every time he touches the ball, his feet follow his eyes, okay?
Oh,
and his team throws him the ball. They split him out at wide receiver. He plays special teams. He does anything the team needs, he can do it. He's a versatile guy. You can tell he doesn't really have much ego about him. In my notes, what I have about him, I think he's a subtle, but he does have explosive plays, okay? He can lull you to sleep. There's nothing about him on the hoof that's flashy, right? He's not a guy that's going to beat guys with speed like Kamar Wheaton, for example, right? But he's a guy that he's got terrific quickness, both laterally, in close quarters, you know what I'm saying? And he can do things in space.
And by quickness, you don't mean straight line speed.
No, it's not straight line speed. Again,
it's more lateral speed is what you're talking about here.
The quickness is what's going to get him out, break him out of the pile. Okay. Now, once he gets out in the open, he's a long strider. But there are times you'll see on his tape, and Hallisville is a 3A school. He still gets caught from behind sometimes, even on that tape. But he's got terrific feet. He's got terrific instincts. He does a great job of waiting on the hole and anticipating where the hole will develop, waiting on his blockers. He carries the ball both in his left hand and in his right hand. It's just a lot to like about this guy. He looks like a natural to me. And
I don't know if you said this before, but this is a guy that his first offer was Texas. This is a guy that Texas has been on since the very beginning of his recruitment. Mm-hmm. This is a guy that Texas has been tracking for a while. So this is a guy that Texas has liked for a while, and they went after him over a guy like Brandon Campbell.
Yep, they offered him in November. He was on campus in January, and I think he let them know in January that he was coming, and now it's time. But the announcement will come on Friday. Brooks is going to be a second back in the class. Kamar Wheaton and LJ Johnson are still the number one priorities. But this is a guy, again, when it comes to taking multiple players at a position in class, sometimes, having those multiple big names, it's a problem. It becomes a problem once they get to campus. Mm-hmm. Brooks is a guy with no ego, like we just mentioned about Blackwell. Okay, he's going to put his head down. He's going to put in. He's going to work. And I don't think he's going to be an instant impact guy, because when he gets to campus, Keontae ain't going to be a senior. Bijan will be a sophomore. Roshan will be a junior. So he's not going to get many carries his first couple of years. But I bet you he see this guy making tackles on kickoff, making tackles on punt team. He's a guy that's going to carve out a role for himself. And then later on, the folks are going to be like, why is Brooks on the field? We got a five-star behind him. And then you can't take him off the field because he's always doing what he's supposed to do. So I like him. I think a good comparison for him, think of a guy like before he got hurt, Will, think of a guy like Trey Newton. Okay? You remember Trey? I played with Trey at Texas.
Trey Newton.
He ran about 2011, 2012. Nate Newton's son, South Lake Carroll. Trey was pretty good. Man, he had to retire because of concussions. Think Trey Newton when you see Jonathan Brooks. And he's another solid addition to the class. He's a piece of the puzzle.
Yeah. And what I really like is his feet, like you said.
Yeah,
that awesome. That dude is just – he's like skating when he's out on the field. His ability to cut on a dime – makes other people look like they're skating. That's probably why it looks like he's skating. Other people just move past him when he makes a cut,
yep.
Right? So that's what I really do like is his ability to cut in space, move through a phone booth, and then I guess burst through a guy.
No, I'm talking about Will. He'll jump cut, and before his feet hit the ground, he already knows what his next move is, and he's making guys miss that he doesn't even make eye contact with. I like him, man. He just doesn't have great top-end speed. But truthfully, top-end speed is maybe the most overrated trait there is in football outside of a cornerback who has to catch up if he's beat from behind. Straight line speed is overrated, especially in a running back. It's sexy. It's cute. It makes the game easier for coaches.
Does Deontay Foreman have great top-end speed?
No. Deontay Foreman can run. He's a 4.5 guy, 4.55 guy. He's faster than Jonathan Brooks, yeah. But think more – do you remember Joe Bergeron? Think kind of like
okay,
that.
That's a good one. I was trying to think of a comparison for this guy. Yeah, Joe Bergeron. Yeah,
it's not great speed. I could outrun Joe if we lined up and ran a 40. But it's he gets the job done.
Let's put that one to the test. I want to see Joe Bergeron versus you.
I wonder what Joe looks like right now. I can run. You sleep. I was leading reverses for Marquise Goodwin. Pull up the UCLA tape. That's me out there. They wouldn't throw me the ball, but I was out there running for the fast guys, trying to block.
Okay. Wait, UCLA. Time out. Do you remember Marquise's block in that,
that
game?
Was UCLA, same where were game. You? Yeah, same game. He would have got ejected nowadays. Yeah,
where were you on that play?
I was on the sideline on that one.
What was your immediate thought? He dead?
Yeah, I was like, damn. And we kicked UCLA ass that day. I remember.
That was great.
That was a DJ Grant game. I think DJ Grant had three touchdowns that game.
Okay.
And then the receiver didn't, I mean, a tight end didn't get a pass the next 3 weeks. Anyway.
Right. Next topic here we got going on is we're still sticking with some recruiting here. As one of the bigger recruiting stories dropped, as Zach Evans announced that he was going, or it was announced for Zach Evans, that he was going to TCU. Now you got the number one and the number two running backs of the 2020 class going to the Big 12. Texas now has to deal with Zach Evans at TCU. And Gary Patterson has got to deal with Zach Evans, which is going
to
be fun.
TCU has to deal with Zach Evans at TCU before anybody.
Exactly.
Before anybody
right.
else does.
But that brought up a funny question that when as soon as I heard that news was, which is the crazier recruitment over the past 2 years? Brew McCoy or Zach Evans? Now, I asked Twitter, and after 815 votes, 53% of, or 54% of people said Zach Evans, and 46% said Brew McCoy. Where do you fall on that, in that spectrum?
The crazier recruitment story, that's got to be Brew McCoy for me. But
okay,
I'll say this though.
I'll play devil's advocate for whatever you say.
Through the grapevine, apparently Zach Evans and his folks contacted Texas last month, like April 20th or April 21st.
He did.
To see if Texas would take him. And Texas said, we'll do our due diligence. We'll get back to you. And Texas never got back to him. Apparently, TCU was choice, you know, for everything that happened with that whole Zach Evans deal. And for him to then visit Ole Miss and Tennessee, you know, obvious, you know, we know what they're about. You know, talk about visiting Florida, and then that got canceled right before the COVID deal, to then end up at TCU, who was never at any point under consideration or on the radar. That tells you that that was a long list before he ended up there with TCU. And Gary Patterson, just from – and I respect the heck out of Gary Patterson as far as being a football coach. But, you know, I mean, we've had 3, 4, 5 kids from DeSoto play at TCU in the past 7, 8 years. And I just, what I hear about him and the way he talks to people, I just have a hard time seeing a guy that is still a little bit emotionally, you know, immature, like a guy like Zach Evans. I just wonder how that's going to fly when Patterson eventually gets irritated and gets tired of handling him with the kiddie gloves when he finally goes off and treats him, you know, like he does those guys. I just wonder if that might kind of be throwing gas on some diesel fuel there. But
well,
it's
no
secret gas,
that
no.
coaches treat 5 stars differently
right.
than the rest of the players. This is TCU's highest rated recruit
right.
ever. Ever. This yeah. is like Ed Oliver going to Houston type of level.
Hey, Major Applewhite tried to take Ed Oliver's coat off the sideline. It was cold, you know? So, hey, you never know. Well, he was already leaving, though, right? Technically, yeah. It was like 2 games left. Yeah, you're right. But, hey, Will, if I mean, and TCU is no stranger to controversy. I mean, let's not forget Devontae Fields, Casey Paul Hall, you know, Trayvon. I mean, TCU is not – that's a little private school up there in Fort Worth. You know, they could – Well, it might end up being a good thing for him, you know? I just, if he can get on the field. Let me say this about Zach Evans. I was talking to somebody about it earlier. I've only seen Zach Evans play twice. Okay, Will, I saw him in 2018 in the state championship against Duncanville. And I saw him at the beginning of this past year against Katy. And Duncanville and Katy are 2 schools that have athletes just like North Shore, just like Zach Evans.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought knowing what I heard about him and what I've seen on his highlight tape and knowing he was number one guy, I left both of those games wanting more from him. So I want to see if he's really the real deal or if he was a little bit of a product of playing behind an NFL offensive line in high school. Mm-hmm. I want to see him because he's still a little bit of a question. I want to see him. So I hope everything works out at Texas. And hell, Texas ain't really had no problem stopping the run. It's been stopping
That's true.
It's not, hell, they can stop Chuba Hubbard. They'll stop a freshman, Zach Evans. I'm not worried about that. But I want to see him play because I have some questions about Zach Evans because both times I saw him, I thought he looked average.
Well, assuming that the 2020 season happens, there's not a lot stopping him from seeing the field at TCU. There's only one running back on that depth chart right now that I'm looking at, that the junior transfer that's before him in the field. So
hold on. Who are you talking about? Oh,
Amari DeMarcado.
Where is he from? He's not beating it. Zach Evans gonna play.
Transferred from Saddleback College.
Yeah. We'll see. TCU did lose both. They did lose both running backs, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
Alona Lua and Darius Anderson. Okay, yeah. But I mean, apparently that quarterback is a runner too, even though he looked like Colt McCoy against Texas.
Max Duggan. Yeah, he's a good quarterback.
Yeah, but no, TCU, Evans, I'm excited to see it. But as far as going back to your question, I know I got a little bit off topic. I think the Brew McCoy deal was crazier because, I mean, all right, so we're talking about a guy that first couldn't make his mind up. Then he finally chooses USC. Enrolls. Will he enroll at USC? He was going there. And
USC.
Then, yeah, USC. What did I just say?
UNC.
UNC. No, he ain't at North Carolina. But yeah, USC. And then he enrolls and then leaves and enrolls at another school. And then goes through spring football there. Okay, cool. All right. That was crazy. Wow, that really happened. Great. Wait, what? You're going home for a summer? What? What? Brew McCoy is not responding to message. What? And then he never comes back. And then it's not just he didn't come back, Will. Hell, where the hell was he this past season? Is he okay? Like, I have not seen or heard anything from Brew McCoy since he left.
He got sick.
Is he okay?
Yeah, he's okay, but he got sick.
Okay. Okay, like hell, man, he's going through, that dude's been going through a lot. I still don't really know what the deal is there with his whole deal. So that's Brew McCoy's situation is nothing compares to that one for me.
Yeah, it was already a crazy, crazy recruitment situation before the third part of it.
Yeah, it's Brew McCoy for me, and that's really not even, it's not even that hard of a decision.
But when was the last time you heard of a high-end five-star being rejected by literally almost every single school that he tried to go to?
I know there's
when
been
was
a
the last
the years.
Time you
I
saw
know,
that?
Don't make me who was the last five-star guy that there were some questions about? A lot of questions. I mean, you got one in this class, 2021, that just committed to Tennessee, Terrence Lewis out of Miami. The linebacker, but I mean, they took him. I don't, off the top of my head, Will, I know there's been a few. This is going to bother me, and they're coming to me when we're done recording, but there have been a couple, but he's definitely the most recent. It doesn't happen to guys like a running back that can touch the ball, you know, pretty much every play that can impact the game like that. They usually, you find something for those, you know, those guys that can score points for you. But no, it's for him to be at one point, I've been the number one recruit in the country to get to the point where, you know, he's on school number 30. That is crazy.
Yeah,
crazy.
I've never seen one of the a former number one recruit in the nation be rejected by every single school that he's tried, except for TCU, who is in running back needs a running back willing to take a chance. I've never seen that. That's never happened before that I can remember off the top of my head.
No, I just. Again, I hope he can play because I want to see what he does. But TCU, all of a sudden, they've been a pain in the ass for Texas this whole time with lesser recruits. Now they're starting to get guys that could play for Texas. So
yeah, they got Quentin Johnston. Now they have Zach Evans. I mean, this is a nice class. This is a really, really nice class for them.
I think I saw something that said in this class alone, TCU signed five of the top like seven recruits in school history or something like that. So. And that's after a 5-7 season. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting. But it's definitely the Brew McCoy. And I just, I feel like I've never seen Brew McCoy play, Will. Like, I want to see both of them play. But for me, nothing will ever compare to that situation right there. That's some crazy stuff there. I want to see the 10-piece documentary on the Brew McCoy deal at some point.
I would agree. I would have to agree that Brew McCoy situation was, I mean, I remember hearing about Brew McCoy going to Texas the day he committed to USC on national television. The day he committed to USC, I was told, no, he's going to transfer to Texas. Did not believe it. Did not believe it until about a week before he said he's going to transfer to Texas. I was like, okay, it's somebody texted me, it's happening. Yeah, that was one of the crazier moments of me covering recruiting that I can remember ever, including the very beginning, which was the 2016 class, which was when everything happened on one single day. Yeah, that was insane. Let's go to some more insane stuff, all right? Including the fact that 2020 football season might not happen, or at least not in the way that we are accustomed to football happening. So California, the California State System, CSU, not the UC system, which is UCLA and Cal Berkeley and all the Pac-12 schools, but the CSU, the Cal State System, which is three Mountain West Conference teams, which is Fresno State, San Diego State, and San Jose State, just declared that there will be no students on campus in the fall, and that basically, with no students on this campus in the fall, that means there's no football for those three schools in the fall. And on top of that, the LA County has declared a stay-at-home until the end of July, meaning UCLA and USC cannot practice, meaning that Alabama and USC is not happening. What does this mean? This means that the timetable for the NCAA to decide when to bring back fall sports has accelerated tremendously. California, again, is pushing the NCAA, like they did with the name, image, and likeness, to make a decision, and quick, meaning maybe in the next month. It canceling sports was what turned out to be the easy thing, the easy part of all of this. Bringing them back is going to be 10 times harder, infinitely more difficult. And so the NCAA needs to give these schools enough leeway, some lead time, so that these schools can have a stable entrance into the 2020 football season, even if that 2020 football season is in 2021, which is bonkers. It's mind-blowing that that's where we are now. But nothing has happened like this since 1918. At this point, we're at the point where the NCAA is humoring ideas like a season that starts in January and ends in April. A season that might start in November and go throughout the winter, which would be hell for teams in the Big Ten. Hell for teams in the Big Ten. Really, the NCAA, fans should be looking for a response from the NCAA pretty soon here. Because, again, the California state system, and in turn the government, is forcing the NCAA's hand. All right, these schools aren't happening in the fall. This isn't happening in the fall. All right, what is the NCAA going to do? How is the NCAA going to, because pretty soon, you know, I would assume that the UC system is going to follow through. And with that, I'm guessing places like Stanford are going to say, all right, no students on campus for the fall, because, I mean, hell, Stanford cares more about academics than they do football, and that's good on them. But with that, I'm guessing Oregon and Washington might follow suit, something along those lines. Some other thing is going to another domino is going to fall, forcing probably the Pac-12 to not play football.
It's not really my area, but I have a hard time seeing how it's possible that everybody else in college football will be playing and one conference is not going to play. What makes the most sense to me, where the NCAA says there will be no non-conference games, no, it'll just be conference games, and we eliminate the first month of the season because that's where the most of them happen. You know, I can see the season starting in October. I can see the season starting in October, okay, and then staying on the same schedule. You still have everything on track. You start with your October, you start playing your conference games, and you still have your bowl games, your conference games, everything at the end. I don't know how. I don't think you can't have one conference just not participate. And then, like, I don't see how that's possible. But
it would be very difficult, especially for the bowl season. For the bowl season, it would shake things up quite a bit.
I mean, to me, and again, I'm not a political person at all. It's not something I pretend to
and
even be.
This conversation really isn't a political conversation. It's more of a NCAA conversation.
I don't. That's just really weird because it seems like California there. They're trying to force somebody to do something, and it seems like if they want to prolong this deal, everybody else opens. It's kind of puts the onus on the NCAA to make a decision. It puts the onus on the government, to make a decision because they're gonna have to. I don't know. It's just I don't. This could end up California doing this could end up throwing a wrench in it for everybody and. This could be what halts and holds up or stops football season right here. Just this right here, this one state choosing to do this. I don't see state of Washington, Oregon voluntarily following suit and not playing, It's just a California thing. It could be a big problem if everybody's not going to be on board. People want to do different things. It's just bad. It's bad.
Right. Now, and here's an interesting thing is this could be the start potentially, and this is me really extrapolating here, the potential beginning of the ACC, the SEC, the Pac-12, the Big 12, the Big 10, starting to make their own decisions outside the NCAA. And I mean that more in decision-making together and creating a more unified body between themselves, because really the NCAA right now is just such a weak institution. And I'm not sure that these conferences will abide by what the NCAA does unless each one of their inputs is met. And the NCAA, they likely will cater to what each one of these conferences does, but it's going to be interesting to see how such a weak centralized system works with all of these powers. The SEC and the ACC, who sort of in the same footprint, are saying, no, we're still going to play, right? They're still going to play, regardless of the Pac-12. The Big 12 and the Big 10, they're still going to play their 9 games. Mm-hmm. It's going to be on these schools and these conferences to make these decisions, not the NCAA. And thus, you're starting to get some more autonomy within these conferences. And they're starting to become more like the federal states of America instead of the United States of America, right? Where it's it's these individual governments deciding against each other, so it's less of a centralized government and more of a federalized government.
And think about it too, like what effect could it have? So if California says, okay, we're not playing, well, okay, does that mean all of those players at USC, UCLA, Cal, Stanford, are they able to transfer and go play? Like it can't work the way that they're trying to do this right now and say, well, we won't play. Like, either everybody's going to have to not play or, so I'm saying it can't. it causes too many other issues in other places.
I think going forward that there will be games played. It's just up to the NCAA or at least a committee of these conferences, a council of these conferences, the Power Five conferences deciding, okay, this is what we're doing. NCAA, make it happen. And television networks, make it happen. Golf has already done this. F1 Sports has already done this. Most professional leagues have already done this. They're saying, all right, here's our new schedule, TV providers, make it happen. Deal with it. Most athletic directors right now are pretty optimistic about playing. However, California, regardless of what your politics are, is really throwing a wrench into this and saying, all right, NCAA or a conglomeration of the Power Five conferences, make a decision and make it quick. We need to see what needs to happen. We need at least some certainty, some stability to make sure that the sport's future is safe, that the season is not lost, that there are not all the ensuing problems that come with missing an entire season that you can't deal with like you can in the MLB or NHL or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. That's what's happening here. That's the major problem that's happening here. That's the major step that needs to be taken very soon, or college football really does have an issue with figuring out what happens to the 2020 season. But I think on that note, we'll have to end it off there. This has been 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I've been your host, Will Baizer. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER. And my man DT, where can we find you?
Guys, you can find me on Twitter as well, DTerrell. That's 2 R's, 2 L's, 0 5. Hit me up. Got any questions about anything? That's the best way to reach me.
You guys can find us and our work on thefootballbrainiacs.com. That's texas.thefootballbrainiacs.com. Thirsty Thursday comes out every week. And you guys can also find us and our other podcasts on the Hornscast channel. It's the Hornscast channel on iTunes, Podbean, Spotify, Google Play, anywhere you guys can find a podcast. If you're not listening to it on your favorite host, you guys can find it there. On that note, thank you all for listening, and we'll see y'all next week. Hook 'em.
Hook 'em.